This is Changemakers with Katie Gore, finding the right solutions for the affordable housing community.
This week's changemaker is Elizabeth Rosen, a nationally recognized expert in historic preservation and the founder of Rosen Preservation. Since 2006, Elizabeth has helped clients secure federal and state historic tax credits for over $3 billion of building rehabilitation. 60 of these projects have invested over $356 million to create or refurbish affordable housing. Elizabeth, welcome to the podcast.
Hi, Katie. Thanks for having me on.
I am glad you're here, and I want to jump right in and start with almost a historic preservation 101, if you will. What are the working goals for historic preservation as it relates to affordable housing?
Well, we work frequently with historic tax credits. So our goal is helping our clients access incentives that make it possible to rehab older buildings for use as affordable housing. Affordable housing is a big need all across the country. Being able to use existing buildings to help support that need is really important and really beneficial to our communities in lots of different ways.
So are there specific definitions or ages that it qualifies as historic? Is it pre-80s or what's the definition there?
Well, typically we're looking at buildings that are more than 50 years old. So right now we're looking at buildings from, 1972 or even 1973. But there are also ways to designate buildings as historic that are less than 50 years old. So we are working with buildings from the mid to late 70s and even from the early to mid 80s.
So in this historic preservation mode, what are you typically seeing? And maybe this is too general of a question. Are we talking about school buildings, railroad depots? What are the typical buildings that you see that are being saved and converted to affordable housing?
We see a lot of different types of buildings converted to affordable housing. Some of them are historic apartment buildings or apartment hotel buildings, which was a residential type that was built frequently between World War I and World War II. So they have private apartment units with kitchens, small kitchens and bathrooms, but they also had space for shared amenities for the residents or when they were built historically. Those, as well as a traditional apartment building, are frequently converted for use as affordable housing. But we do see lots of schools being converted for affordable housing. They provide a really nice fit where each classroom can become an apartment. The other nice thing about a school conversion is that the school buildings are typically located within a neighborhood. So particularly when these projects provide senior housing, it's a way for community members to stay in their neighborhood without having the responsibility of caring for a single family house.
I remember one time I did a property inspection on a hotel conversion, and I was so impressed because there was so much limestone and the facade was amazing. They had an art wall made out of mosaic tile from like the 20s. They had this pool that was there. Features that you typically would not see in a senior community or a new construction. So what have you seen be like real, real winning attributes of saving these buildings and incorporating them into their new lives?
Well, schools are a great example because we almost always see the auditorium space saved and repurposed for some type of community use. It's a great way for the neighborhood association or other local groups, even for groups within the community of the apartment building, to be able to have space for gathering and for different types of activities. And they're highly ornate spaces. We did a project once that had been an apartment hotel that had a beautiful 1920s tiled restaurant on the first floor that was still rented out for events, unrelated to the apartment building, but just a magnificent space in that affordable housing community.
What I find fascinating is that sometimes you'll see people say, oh, the usefulness and the, you know, conversion, the life is, the building has lived its life and its time. But then you see groups that you're working with come in and easily get another 50 years of a repurposed life and renovated life. What are the community wins when that happens?
The community wins when you rehab a building are so many. It's a long, long list. Starting with your maintaining or maybe you're revitalizing a building that has been out of use in the community. A lot of times these projects happen with what would be called a white elephant building in a community. So a building that maybe has been vacant for a period of time. Nobody's been able to figure out the right new use. But when you combine different incentives, you know, bringing in historic tax credits with low-income housing tax credits, for instance, you can make the pro forma work so that a building that has a lot of sentimental value to the community remains an active and vital part. Because historic buildings are found at the heart of a community, you have access to infrastructure, you have access to services and businesses, you have access to transportation. So unlike developing in a greenfield site, you don't have to create these elements again. You're reinforcing what already exists in the community. Most of all, there's a lot of what we like to call embodied energy in an existing building. So putting on a little bit more of a sustainability hat, when you think about a building that already exists, somebody has harvested the natural resources, spent the energy, and the labor to convert them into building materials, erected this building, and you were taking advantage of the energy that's already been expended and the money that's already been expended to create it. A lot of the materials that were used, especially early in the 20th century, are extremely durable and in some cases much more durable than materials that we would build new housing with today. So investing in the rehabilitation is going to extend the life of that building, you know, another 50 years, maybe even another 100 years if you maintain what you create.
I love how you phrase that, embodying the energy of that building. One time, my husband and I lived in a house that was built in 1910, and it had the original hardwood floors. All we had to do was refinish them, and it was like you could just feel the wood, the life that was there. And as you were describing that, I was like, you know, material durability, sustainability, you know, using what's there. Those are all amazing concepts that never go out of style, but it's not often that we can describe the energy that you feel when you're in these kinds of structures and you're in these kinds of buildings that have contributed to so many people's lives and errors and just points in time. I'm thinking for the person who may not have such an attachment or affinity like you and I might for historic buildings, what would you say if you were going to debunk some of the myths related to preserving historic buildings and repurposing them for affordable housing? Are there some that you want to address?
You know, there are myths around what you can and can't do. There are a lot of myths around what it means to have your building designated as historic. When we are working with a program like the Historic Tax Credit, we are talking about a designation to the National Register of Historic Places. And There, the National Register designation at its heart is purely an honorary recognition of buildings that represent our shared past, our honor, the honor roll of our history and our built environment. If you are simply the owner of a property that's listed on the National Register, you can do whatever you want with it as a private individual. You can change it however you want. You can tear it down if you want. Where the limitations come is if you decide to use a program, like a federal program like the Historic Tax Credits, and then there will be a review about what you do. But when you use the Historic Tax Credits, the requirements of that program are really about maintaining the historic character of the building. It's a program that was designed to extend the economic life of historic buildings, understanding and recognizing that nobody's going to keep a building around if it doesn't serve a purpose, and that that purpose can change over time. The schools we were talking about are a great example. You know, for whatever reason, there's a change in the size of the population of a community. They are consolidating their schools and building a new school. They're updating their schools for another reason. I personally love education in old school buildings, but I know there are a lot of reasons why that is can be challenging in the 21st century. So taking that building that was built for one purpose and adapting it for a new use like affordable housing is exactly why this program was created. So we have to go in and understand what are the key elements to documenting that historic character, to presenting that historic character, so that when we're making changes and making this new use compatible with the historic building, we're incorporating these elements. So we've seen, for instance, early 20th century schools often had in the library or in the kindergarten room, they'd have these really lovely decorative fireplaces with wonderful tile work on them. Those will get incorporated into apartment units because it's an important historic feature. So, you know, there's somebody in affordable housing who has a beautiful tiled fireplace in their unit. It's understanding the nuances that are tricky and that often intimidate people, but they shouldn't be intimidated by it because there are people out there who understand how you get around, how you make the two needs mesh.
So we've been talking about Historic Preservation 101 in some senses, and I want to go now a little deeper. You mentioned the Historic Tax Credit, and I've actually read that when used, each dollar of the historic tax credit, when it's leveraged, can sometimes equate to five times that in private investment, all of which is spent before any tax credits are issued. What is your take on how crucial these historic tax credits can be for redevelopment?
I think they provide a really critical gap financing. The purpose of the program, one, to extend the economic life of historic buildings. The second piece to that is to then encourage people to treat these buildings in a way that's compatible with their historic character by providing this financial incentive to do the right thing, to treat elements in a way that they might not otherwise without this added financing. So to fill the gap, a great example, I think, is windows. And windows are always one of the most complicated and costly components of a historic rehab project. Going back to our discussion about preservation of building materials, you know, wood is a great example of a material that just doesn't have the durability anymore that it did, say, 100 years ago. So wood that was being harvested and used to build windows before World War II was usually old growth lumber, which means it was very dense, it was very strong. since World War II, the wood that's being used for construction in all sorts of different ways is much newer growth lumber. And just by its nature, it's not as dense of a material. It's not as strong of a material. It's not going to endure for as long as that old growth would. So one way to treat a building with historic wood windows is to fix them up, because really, if you fix them up, you add insulation so they're not drafty and leaky. You make sure that they operate properly. They're going to last another 100 years, whereas new windows won't last as long. But if your building doesn't have its original windows, or they're in very poor condition, you need to replace them, what do you do? Well, let's look at how the window is configured. Is it just a single pane of glass? Is it a double hung sash? Is it a pair of casement windows? How is the glass divided within each of those components? What are the profiles like? How much solid material is there, frame, compared to the amount of glass? And when you look at all of those different components, it may cost a little more to install a window that matches the original, but that's what that tax credit helps to cover, that additional cost.
Thanks so much for sharing all of that. Okay, we have to take a break, but coming up in the second part of my conversation with Elizabeth Rosen, the founder of Rosen Preservation, Elizabeth shares how she communicates the importance of preservation to real estate developers.
We're really talking about the additional equity that the state and federal credits bring in. You know, it gets down to the pro forma and the bottom line, and that's really what draws them in the first time.
Thanks for listening to Changemakers with Katie Gore. To find out more about Katie, go to quadel.com. That's QUADEL.com. This has been a production of Forbes Books Radio.